Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like Mohicans and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got some rappers with that cold broke face. They tour around the world, then they going no place. My KRS one moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking me, I say impeccable. Running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I blaze them too. Ooh, deja vu. You seen this all before me, slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs. Cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot. Me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Well, we're starting a little bit late today. Running late. So please excuse me for those who tuned in at 8 o'clock. My daughter's game, so I'm trying to get everything plugged in so we can start the show. So just give me about 2 minutes, 1 minute. 90 seconds, that is. We want to set it off like we always set it off, then kick it like we always kick it. Hope so. It'll be like yesterday's show. Might be, because I really ain't got no guests scheduled in. My daughter had a basketball game. They won. I was happy about that. And then car went down. Had to get a ride from the game. But it is what it is. Let's start the show, everybody.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
strive
and rise.
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. Three, four.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to
sing along.
Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven rain. Rain with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoices rise high.
Burning desire,
loud as the orgy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normally commercial breaks will come on after that, but I'm really running behind on the show. I'm going to bring commercial breaks at the top of the hour. Let me go in there and play this little tape for you all till I get everything squared away because I have been running late. This is how the FBI destroyed the movement.
As far back as the 1920s, when he began as FBI director, Hoover had gone after persons like Marcus Garvey. Garvey's organization, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, had a membership numbering in the millions, and somehow Hoover found this threatening and worthy of surveillance and undermining attempts. Garvey's influence had been international and had drawn world attention to America's treatment of black people. Paul Robeson was another who was viewed by Hoover as an enemy. This reporter has personally examined thousands of FBI, CIA, and other U.S. government agency documents that were kept on Paul Robeson. Robeson, like Garvey, had an international audience at his command, and he used that platform to denounce racism in the United States.
Most importantly, however, were the questions raised by the State Department as to my political opinion. Here's a question of whether one who wants to sing and act can have, as a citizen, political opinion. And in attacking me, they suggested that when I was abroad, I spoke out against injustices to the Negro people in the United States. I certainly did. And the Supreme Court Justice just ruled, Judge Warren, in the segregation cases, that world opinion had a lot to do with that ruling that our children, Negro children, can go to school like anybody else in the South. I'm very proud to have been a part of directing world opinion to precisely that condition. The second, that I fight for the independence of the colonial peoples of Africa. Bandung, the colored peoples of the world assembled and made it clear that nobody is going to tell them what to do. They're going to have the independence. I'm proud of that.
When the 60s came, many factions of the civil rights movement had developed the same international perspective.
Those of us living in the United States who see ourselves as, and who are in fact, you know, descendants of the Africans who were brought to this country, who were enslaved, I mean, and who are rebelling and revolting now against our oppressive condition, and we are concerned about Africa. We see Africa as our motherland, and we feel that we have a responsibility to speak with as much passion as any other African on this issue. The United States government says that change must come in South Africa through peaceful means. That same government has over 500,000 troops in Vietnam fighting not white people, but brown Vietnamese.
So it is small wonder that the civil rights movement was also subjected to heavy attacks by Hoover. Billions of government dollars were spent in this direction. Many of these activities were not only unwarranted, but of questionable legality. The congressional hearings into the assassination of Dr. King bore this out. Two FBI agents testified before a Senate committee chaired by Senator Frank Church.
I'm trying to find out what it was that impelled the some part of the FBI to pursue Martin Luther King with such an obsession. And what I understood that answer to be is, first of all, it was not any suspicions of the commission of a federal crime. None of the literature showed up a single suggestion that Martin Luther King had committed or was about to commit a crime. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But at this point, much of what was being done did involve challenges to local laws. And there is a very strong suggestion that King was seen as rallying the lawbreakers and would-be lawbreakers, albeit for a cause that sounded pure. Looking now in terms of, if we look at what might have gotten the Bureau started, and if we remember at the same time he is extremely critical of the Bureau's own law enforcement efforts, we see throughout these documents and the New Left documents that it is taboo to criticize the Bureau and particularly the director.
Well, was he ever charged with fomenting violence? Did he ever participate in violence? Was it ever alleged that he was about to be violent?
That was the very opposite of his philosophy, Senator.
So that it was neither the fear of commission of a crime or the commission of violence. Was there any serious charge that he himself was a communist?
No such charge ever was made.
So that what was left then was a decision on the part of some persons or person within the FBI that he should nevertheless be pursued.
And replaced.
And the basis for that apparently was political. The decision that he was dangerous or potentially dangerous to someone's notion of what this country should be doing, and a further theory that the FBI possessed the ability to enter into this field and to investigate and to intimidate and seek to neutralize and indeed replace a civil rights leader that they thought to be politically unacceptable. Is that correct?
Yes.
Correct. All right. And the tactics they used apparently had no end. Microphonic surveillance of hotel rooms. They included informants. They included sponsoring of letters signed by phony names to relatives and friends and organizers. They involved even plans to replace him with someone else the FBI was to select as a national civil rights leader. Is that correct?
Yes, that plan didn't get very far.
But it was seriously considered, and Mr. Hoover penned a note to that suggestion commending its authors, did they not?
Yes.
It also included an indirect attempt to persuade the Pope not to see him.
And many other people.
A direct attempt to persuade one of our major universities not to grant him a doctorate degree.
That's correct. After the March on Washington, there was an acceleration. He was defined because of his speech in that demonstration in Washington as the most dangerous and effective leader in the country, and there was a paper battle within the Bureau as to how best to attack him, and he was attacked. After Time magazine named him as Man of the Year, again, the Bureau finds that reprehensible, believes it must attack and destroy. When he was given the Nobel Prize, again, they seek to discredit Dr. King with the persons who welcomed him back from that award. When he began to speak out against the Vietnam War, there's a new crescendo of efforts by the Bureau to discredit and destroy Dr. King.
It is my feeling that the assassination of Dr. King was a part of a conspiracy in the country, and I do believe that some individuals in very high places of our government were involved in this conspiracy. And it is the same conspiracy that eliminated and destroyed President Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, and so many other freedom and human rights individuals.
I'm convinced that the government was involved at some level. I will never separate the conduct, the attitude of Hoover and the FBI from Dr. King's assassination. I never will do that.
I think one of the most important things that come out in that investigation was that Martin Luther King in Memphis was in a white hotel, and the FBI admitted that they leaked to the press that Dr. King was staying in a white hotel instead of a black hotel, and it was that embarrassment that forced Dr. King to move into the Lorraine Hotel where he was killed.
There are more questions regarding the FBI's role in the assassination of Dr. King. For example, why was Dr. King stripped of his protection just before he was killed in Memphis? Reporter Les Payne and myself interviewed police officer Ed Reddit of the Memphis Police Department, who told how he was mysteriously removed from his security post near Dr. King. However, later, his superior, Chief Holloman, denied doing so.
Why do you feel you were pulled away from your assignment of surveillance that day? Why do you think they pulled you away?
I think because whoever pulled the trigger, I could identify.
When there were complaints from somebody, did we reduce manpower at the Lorraine? Did we reduce manpower in
no,
the area?
No.
the attorneys general in 1965 had for 25 years authorized wiretaps in a fairly widespread fashion. This was just one. At the very most, the only thing I can think of that I would have done, but I didn't even do that, was go talk to Bob Kennedy and ask him about it. But Mr. Katzenbach, in whom I also had great confidence, without giving me the details, said that it was all right, that he had, that there were no, it was not being done anymore, it would not be done anymore, and that there was just nothing to worry about.
I think the issue is the neo-fascist police state mentality that pervaded the intelligence community, that is a danger to America to this day.
Malcolm X was kept under heavy FBI surveillance since he got out of prison back in 1953. As he rose to national prominence as the black Muslim's chief spokesman, he became aware that he was under close watch.
Our desire, our prayer, that we can have a peaceful, intelligent rally here this afternoon. But at the same time, we see that they have surrounded us with many of their own agents in uniform and out of uniform.
That surveillance escalated into the infiltration of the Nation of Islam. Personal frailties were played upon. Jealousy arose, and Malcolm was ultimately ousted from that organization. This caused an intense climate of rivalry that set the stage for Malcolm's assassination in February of 1965.
He was really declared a hypocrite at the time. And because of some of the things that he was saying in regards to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, may God be pleased with him, a strong position was really taken against him. The ministers began to speak out against the things that Malcolm was saying in regards to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Accusations that he had made about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He had accused the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, for instance, of fathering children and et cetera. And you must understand that at that time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to the Muslims then, was held in such high reverence as you would even think of any prophet being held in high reverence. And this is the kind of love and admiration that the Muslims at that time had for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So when Minister Malcolm began to say those things, it was taken as an outright lie. I would say that, take for instance, one time in the Muhammad Speaks at that time, the newspaper printed a big article concerning the chief hypocrite. And it actually had a picture of Malcolm's head, you know, rolling or bouncing down the street at that time. And, you know, the way that picture is depicted, you know, he has little horns on his head and things like this here. So indirectly, I would say that a very, very strong position was taken against him.
Yes, he's immoral. You can't take nine teenage women and seduce them and give them babies and not tell me you're, and then tell me you're moral. You could do it if you admitted you did it and admitted that the babies were yours. I'd shake your hand and call you a man. A good one, too. But anytime you seduce teenage girls and make them be charged with adultery, make them hide your crime, why, you're not even a man, much less a divine man. So, and this is what he did. He took at least nine that we know about. And I'm not speculating because he told this to me himself. Yes, that's why he wanted me dead, because he knew that as soon as I woke up, I'd tell it.
Plan of action was basically what took place. Me and Leon, we took seats down in the front of the Audubon, became early. We would drift into the Audubon. If indeed there was a search, then we could never enter. There was no search, so we drifted in just like we had hoped to. Leon Davis and myself took seats down front on the left-hand side. Benjamin and William, who carried the sort of shotgun, sat right behind us. you know. And we were set somewhat in the back or almost in the middle. And our plan was, as soon as brother came out to speak, that Wilbur would throw the smoke bomb to make a distraction, and that Will would fire his shotgun, and that Leon and myself, we would fire our weapons, and then this break for the door.
And what I did say was, when I bring before you the Minister Malcolm, and I pray that you and I will listen, hear, and understand. Thank you.
As in Dr. King's assassination, a police superior has trouble with the truth. He tells reporters that two suspects were arrested at the Audubon. Later, official police reports say that one was arrested. Also, listen closely as the police official carefully handles the question about police on the scene.
We have two suspects in custody now.
Where were they arrested? Who fired the shot?
I wouldn't know that at this time.
Where were they arrested, sir?
One of these men was arrested on the street by one of our patrolmen close by.
There were no police at this meeting, were there, Inspector?
There were no uniformed policemen assigned inside this ballroom.
No uniform police on the scene. Does this mean that police out of uniform were there? And if so, why didn't they take action? What were they doing there? This behavior pattern rings a bell of striking similarity with the behavior pattern of the CIA overseas.
The church committee produced cables, demanded and got cables, which proved it traced the CIA's plan to kill Lumumba. Sid Gottlieb got on a plane and went to Leopoldville. Headquarters sent a cable saying, use the poison. Gottlieb was couriering for the poison. Headquarters sent a cable saying, you have to use it promptly because it deteriorates. And they had a plan to try and get it into his toothpaste or give it to him in a Mickey at some social function. And then there's a gap, no cables, no explanation of what happened. Then 5 weeks later, he's beaten to death on an airplane. And unfortunately, though, the airplane was in the control of people who had agency cryptonyms. And the gap of what happened has never been answered. The men who were involved and were responsible obviously aren't speaking out, and there's no paper to prove anything.
So perhaps the same tactics were used against the civil rights movement. Heavy infiltration of the ranks, spread the seeds of dissension, then step back and let the blood spill.
As I see it, Mr. Chairman, it is for this committee to be able to figure out how to persuade the people of this country that indeed it did go on, and how shall we ensure that it never happened again. But it will happen repeatedly unless we can bring ourselves to understand and accept that it did go on. And I say that as one who worked as a United States attorney with the Bureau and have enormous respect for its capacities in the field of kidnapping, bank robbery, and a lot of other things, but am appalled to learn what the, if it's correct, the intelligence side of that Bureau was up to for so long.
If we would like to believe that the FBI would do all this viciousness and all of these things to an individual and would stop short of killing him, then we're out of our mind. In America today, if we believe the CIA would deal with foreign assassinations and would not consider that home, that's like saying the mafia runs crooked gambling tables in South America, but honest ones in America. It just ain't true.
We've seen then how the decade of struggle ended. Many of the prominent figures like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. were assassinated amidst an intense climate of hatred that government agencies were acutely aware of. In fact, the FBI contributed to creating the climate of hate. Moreover, the assassinations themselves appear to have been facilitated by an elaborate network of government and police agencies who were watching very closely every move that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. were making, and then at the same time, they disappeared just as the assassinations occurred. But those were the leaders. What about the students, the troops of the movement? Well, they too were subjected to harassment. This document that you're looking at now shows how the FBI tried to divide factions within the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And the Black Panther Party was also subjected to heavy, heavy surveillance.
We knew the history of the FBI's infiltration tactics in other organizations, particularly the American Communist Party. There was already a record compiled that showed that the FBI was even in charge of various branches of the Communist Party. So we understood that police tactic of infiltration. There was a situation where, in a sense, the white racism was its own victim. Like, for racist reasons, J. Edgar Hoover had not recruited black agents. He had a lot of white agents. And it takes time to train some black agents. In the meantime, those white agents, try as they might, were not able to infiltrate our ranks because the Black Panther Party did not have any white members. Okay? And we relied upon people that we knew. And we kept people that we didn't know on another level. And I think this is why we didn't suffer more that way, because they did catch up and start a crash program of recruiting black agents, and they very quickly filled that gap, but it took them about a year to do it.
In the summer of 1978, I interviewed a man who worked as an informer for the FBI during the 1960s. His name is Dothard Perry, also known as Ed Riggs, also known as Bill Perry, also known as Othello.
How were you paid?
The pay was always in cash. Cash, and you would sign a card. It would go like this. A rendezvous or a drop-off point would be picked out either by yourself or the agent. You would meet the agent there. Usually it would be in a vehicle. You get in the vehicle, he would hand you the money. He would tell you first to count the money. He would tell you the amount while you counted it. If the amount was there, he would then bring out a card. On that card would be for the week of such and such. In other words, the week was dated. So-and-so has been paid the amount of. Then you would sign the card, and then the agent would sign the card. The reason for this is that if all of a sudden the IRS became very interested about where you were getting all this extra money from, you could always tell them to go back to the Bureau, and the Bureau would have your cards on file.
I see. Were there such things as bonuses?
Oh, yes.
What were they paid for?
Bonuses were paid for, suppose while you were meeting with, or you were at a meeting with Bobby Seals, Chulai of the Red Army happened to come to the meeting too, which is something which would be a new development. That's bonus time.
In other words, a hot piece of information.
Hot piece, very hot piece.
Did you ever suffer pangs of conscience?
Quite a few times. Quite a few times. I still suffer pangs of conscience. I suffer from the fact that a lot of people trusted me, and I misused that trust. I suffer from the fact that a lot of information that I gave out was the undoing of certain groups or certain people. I suffer from the fact that I'm on the run constantly. I have no real life to speak of.
You have no family life, really? You have a wife?
No, I don't have a wife. I do have a child. I can't see her that often. I have to stay away from them because once I come around, the Bureau shows up and harassment starts. I have very few close personal friends, no one to really confide in. It's like being on the outside of a glass jar and everything is happening inside the jar, but you're on the outside. You can see it happening, but you can't participate.
Why have you decided to talk to me?
For the simple reason, I think this information should be put out to the public. I think not only black people, but everyone should become aware of what your so-called law enforcement agencies do to so-called enforce the law. Because between you, myself, and the audience, I've seen more felons in law enforcement than I have in prison.
Many would say, well, look, you yourself just got through saying that the DLA was involved in criminal activity. What's wrong with wanting to put them in prison? How would you answer them?
I would answer them this way. First off, we have to understand why they did what they did. But I'm not even going to go off into that psychological hoo-ha. What I'm going to say is when you become just as bad as the people that you go after, then there's nothing gained and a whole lot lost.
You also were active in the infiltration of many cultural groups. Before we go into that step by step, how much research and study did the FBI engage in of black culture in the late 60s?
A great amount.
Give me an idea.
From the thing is, they have a file on every type of magazine that blacks read. They have a file on the music.
Music?
Music, dance, theater, actors, comedians, you name it, man.
And they would actually study these different...
Oh, yes, definitely.
What would they do with music?
To understand the people, you have to understand the culture. To infiltrate, you have to understand. You had a lot of so-called white liberals that were infiltrating the so-called black groups using the information that they had gathered from the studies of blacks.
You mean just to understand the behavior pattern of our people?
Oh, yeah. I can, Will Heaton could name out some jams of Miles Davis that I hadn't even heard of. He could name off some books that I hadn't even read pertaining to black culture.
Do you ever see agents actually studying music of...
Yes, yes. Yes, I've seen them going over even video portion of cultural events. The understanding, like when... Okay, you have an organization like Leroy Jones Black House. You remember that. Okay, Leroy Jones's place, which was done on the thing of tribalism. That's where I first heard the word Kintu, Mantu, Huntu, Hintu. These words of the African continuum. I learned that from an agent. He ran it down to me. They make in-depth studies of the personalities of the people they're dealing with too. Culturally, it always helps when you. It's the thing of. You can take their culture and use it against them.
How large would you say an extensive collection on our culture would you say the FBI has? Would you raided as large as a particular library, like the Schomburg Library in Harlem, or...
I would rate it better. I would rate it better, and the fact is that they go into details, details that we probably would overlook. Will Heaton used to meet me in different places, you know. Will Heaton, that was one of my supervising agents. There is a certain bar in the Los Angeles area where people into black cultural things met, and Will Heaton used to meet me there. And he would go into very long and tiring conversations with some very articulate brothers about culture, African culture, and Afro-American culture.
Tell me about some of the cultural organizations that you infiltrated and what you did.
PASLA, Mafunde, Watts Writers Workshop, which they had...
The Watts Writers Workshop?
Yes. Watts Writers Workshop, which was one of the oldest established black writers' workshop.
That place was burned down.
Yeah. The bureau had it burnt down.
How do you know that?
I know because I participated. I did the arson.
You burned down the Watts Writers'
workshop? Yes.
Why did they want it to go?
At the time, funding had been cut to the workshop, had been cut out, but it looked like there was a possibility of a grant being given back to the workshop. And if there was no theater, there would be no grant.
How did you do it?
Two cans of kerosene, a Purex bottle, gasoline, and a flare, highway flare.
Why didn't you use more sophisticated stuff?
Oh, no. No. You're never overly sophisticated. It's too obvious. This way you make it look like, you know, maybe somebody in the neighborhood that got kicked out of theater at one time got mad and came and burned the damn theater up, that kind of thing.
But you were involved in this theater? I mean, didn't it get to you at all what you were...
Hey, man, that got to me a great deal. I love that theater. I built the stage.
You built the stage?
Oh, yeah. When I got to the workshop, the stage... that had been the original stage that had been built needed an extension on it. The original part of the stage was in terrible condition. They had no lighting system. I put the lighting system in myself. I put the stage in myself. And that was a stage, man. And that was a theater. It's a nice theater.
Who was the director of that workshop?
Harry Dolan.
Harry Dolan. Some very, very well-known artists supported that workshop, gave money to it.
Some very well-known artists came out of the Watts Writers Workshop. You know, Glenn Tubman, Yaphet Kotto, Sidney Poitier used to come down there and give a class. Sammy Davis Jr. used to come down there all the time. Quincy Jones used to come there and give music classes. We had our own 8-track studio set up for sound. We had our own sound room there.
Was part of your other activities and responsibilities to study the profiles of celebrities who were supportive of organizations?
Definitely, and especially, like I said, psychological backgrounds, weaknesses and strengths. Did he have a weakness for blondes? Did he have a weakness for money? Did he snort cocaine? Did he smoke marijuana? They even get into, that's one thing the Bureau loves, is their sexual background. They have files and files on different blacks, not only celebrities, but a lot of others, sexual activity.
What would they do with this information?
Oh, that's used as a weakness.
So they would feed these weaknesses?
Yes.
Did you see that happen?
Oh, yes. Doc Holliday, who is one of the leaders of the BGF, Black Gorilla Family, which is a prison gang in the California state prison system. Upon his release from prison, a certain sister made herself known to him at a nightclub, whereupon he moved in with her, and she picked up names, telephone numbers, information, you know, that kind of thing. That lasted for a good 3.5 months.
Was this an unusual thing, or did this happen often?
No, that happens all the time.
Did you yourself get involved in doing that?
Yes.
Give me an example.
There was a gentleman that was on trial in Los Angeles that belonged to the BLA that had been busted in a southern state for a bank robbery, but was brought with two other people to Los Angeles to stand trial for the machine gunning of a police officer in Los Angeles. I was supposed to worm my way into the affections of his sister and whatever it took to get the information that I needed as far as what kind of defense they planned to use as to turn this information over to the federal prosecution.
Did you do it?
I got the information, and thank God I didn't have to go through with the actual thing of sexual activity.
What do you mean, thank God?
The sister was rather unappealing.
How did you justify to the organizations in which you had infiltrated yourself that you were living on an $800 a week stipend or on an $800 a week standard of living when most of them were living hand to mouth?
Well, hey, brother, you know, I'm hustling, you know. I mean, hey, man, you know, sell a little this on the side, a little that on the side. You know, I get over, you know, that kind of thing. In other words, ain't nobody's business but mine where I get the money. So, you know, everybody took it for granted that I was possibly doing a little dealing on the side, that kind of thing. Then also, everybody liked me for the simple reason that I would do things that I didn't have to do. I would go out of my way. You know, like Mafundi would have a pageant and they needed someone to do the sound setup for him. And I'd say, of course, I'll do it for you. You know, that kind of thing. I was very well liked at one time in the community.
Would you say to American citizens that this situation of surveillance and infiltration continues to this day?
Oh, yes.
On the dimension that you experienced?
Probably much larger by now.
Larger?
Oh, yeah. Let me put it to you like this. Each year, everything gradually escalated up more and more. So I figure when I left, it didn't stop escalating. As they say, one monkey does not stop anybody's show.
You mentioned Sammy Davis Jr., who at one time, it was reported, gave money to the Black Panther Party, I believe. Were you ever assigned to look into that?
Yes, I was told to try to get as close to Mr. Davis or to anyone in his office as I could. I used to go up and have real chit-chat, chummy-chummy conversation with his personal secretary, Ann, at the 9000 building on Sunset. And I used to bring a Portapak video camera, and I used to go around and I would videotape the whole office.
You mean celebrities would be coming into his office and you'd film them freely?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't they question that?
I'm from the Ross Writers Workshop. Yeah, right on, brother, you know, that kind of thing. No questions asked. Same thing with the NAACP Image Awards, you know. They were very interested in people like Sammy Davis Jr. There was another black in Los Angeles that they were very interested in because, not Los Angeles, but in Sacramento, Nathaniel Colley, who's attorney for the NAACP. And I know Nat. And they wanted information on him just for the simple reason that he's an attorney for the NAACP. Which makes no sense to me, but must make a lot of sense to them because they use the information.
You've been called upon to testify in Washington. Before who?
Before the Senate committee. I was called first to testify before the church committee, and I did go to Washington, D.C. I did testify to those people, and I want to say right now that the committee was full of smacks. They got loads and loads of information and didn't even use it, didn't release it. I had tapes that I offered to them in evidence against the Federal Bureau of Investigation with conversations of me and my supervising officer where he's telling me to obtain certain articles for him by stealing. Don't get fingerprints on it. We can really use that. Did you take the weapons over to such and such? The Church's committee told me that they couldn't use the tapes because the tapes were gotten by illegal means.
What would you say about the composition of the committee panel that questioned you?
I can say that for the birds, too, because the same people that I was talking about were the same people on the panel with the Church's committee.
What do you mean?
When I came in the room to be interviewed by the so-called people from the Church's committee, the representatives from the Federal Bureau of Investigation were also in the room.
FBI agents were a member of the church committee panel?
They were there with the investigators for the church's committee asking questions just like the church's committee. And see, this is another thing that I find fault with, and this is another reason why I am not going to Washington, D.C., is that, again, I have been asked to come again for the second time. I'm not going again. For the simple reason that when I went up there with the idea that there were agencies investigating the Federal Bureau of Investigation, not the Federal Bureau of Investigation investigating itself.
You're on the lam, almost. Do you have a sense that you're going to be arrested and go to prison?
Oh, yeah, eventually. Eventually, when things come to a head, it has to. It has to be that way. No other way around it.
What would you say to citizens who sit and listen to what you've said and have a sense of frustration and helplessness?
There are some agents, the old line agents, that disagree with the tactics that were used during the so-called COINTEL period. But one thing I don't want us to jump off of is that people always talk about, they're talking about COINTEL now so heavily. I'm not talking about COINTEL. I'm talking about a thing called BD, which was better known as Black Death. The Black Death was set up for a simple thing of infiltrating black organizations and black groups, whatever.
Where was this Black Death, or were there a number of them?
There were a number of Black Deaths, but the head Black Death was in Washington, D.C., controlled by Sullivan. And the...
Was he black?
No.
Mm-hmm. And what was the function of the black desks all over the country? I guess there were dozens.
The function of the black desk was to monitor activity, social unrest, revolutionary groups, cultural groups, and such in the black community.
And feed it into this central desk. And it still exists?
As far as I know, yes.
We've seen a number of investigations into the assassination of Martin Luther King. We've seen an extended police trial of the assassination of Malcolm X. What you seem to say substantiates what many black people say out on the street, that government agents or agencies knew that these assassinations were brewing and either participated in them or allowed them to take place.
It would behoove black people, it would behoove all people, really, to question so-called the cut-and-dry one lone assassin theory. The Bureau and other intelligence agencies are very good at conspiracies. They are very good at setting people up to be killed. They are very good at making innuendos so the person will be killed.
City police don't know about it because they have policemen in there. They don't let black people form anything without some policemen in there. And while I was in the black Muslim movement, over the black Muslim movement, many of the police who were sent to infiltrate us, they're black, would tell me, say, look, I'm a cop, but I have to come. They would tell me. I knew the Muslim movement was full of police. So don't you think anything is going down that they don't know about? The only thing that goes down is what they want to go down. And what they don't want to go down, they don't let it go down.
Something else was used against the students that drove the final nails into the coffin, killing the movement.
What stopped it, of course, almost dead in its track, and not by any accident, was a widespread and deliberately organized widespread use of drugs. The fact that a decision was made, and I think you, most of you familiar with the broadcast of the mafia defector who went on public media to declare what happened and outline in great detail the great plan of how to destroy the black youth of the nation, starting in New York. He said in a meeting 20 miles outside of New York City, the great decision was made. He said he didn't have to guess about it, and those who heard him know that I'm quoting him almost verbatim, because he was there. And the decision was to concentrate the distribution of drugs on the black youth of the nation, starting in New York, beginning in the elementary school, and that to punish, even on the pain of death, any of the distributors who invaded the white community of predominantly white schools. That New York and other large cities were to be divided up into districts. The district commander, black, was to be given any kind of car he wanted, Mercedes, Rolls Royce, anything, because this would be a part of the sales pitch. Said blacks just love fine cars, and he'd drive around through the community in his fine car, and some of his key assistants, and he'd be identified, he'd be known, and that sort of stuff. And so I'm not going any further into it. But thus it began, and the spread over the country, and we fell for it. Now, one thing was important, that the thing to attract the blacks, more than any other thing, more than the drug itself, but to spread the word, have a number of key young people in it, and spread the word that this is the end thing. So that'll get them. Just say it's the end thing, and they'll brave the fires of hell to be a part of the end thing.
So that's our story of the decade of struggle. We put together this film to pay particular homage and tribute to the extraordinary young people of that era. And we give the story to our young people of today in particular, in the hope that they'll stop and think about much of the negativism that they're caught up in nowadays and try to understand why.
People will tell you what you want to hear. People will tell you what they think you'll believe, and then they'll tell you the truth. From what I'm hearing from the Dolphins, from what I've read in the paper, I don't believe they're telling the truth. Ted Wells will get to the bottom of the truth, but I want to talk about a culture that was fostered in that locker room and was allowed to flourish. The Miami Dolphins locker room probably consists of 75-80% blacks. If you allow Richie Incognito to walk around in an open locker room and to use a racial epithet that most black Americans, all black Americans, know the stigmatism and the hate and the vitriol that comes with that word. If you allow him to do that, you are encouraging him to do that. It has to go unchecked. I read, and I don't know, it's alleged that some black players said Richie Incognito was an honorary black. There's no such thing. This tells me everything I need to know about the Miami Dolphins locker room, how we got here and why we got here. Because so many people, if you don't understand it, because I'm 45, I grew up in rural South Georgia. Maybe I'm a disconnect with me, JB. Maybe it's me. Just ask your parents, ask your grandparents. The mountain that they climbed so a black person in America could have respect, could have dignity, and you allow this in an open locker room to take place is unacceptable. It's, I place this, I'm so disappointed. I just hope that someone was misquoted. I hope I'm wrong, and they didn't allow Richie Incognito to say this racially charged word in an open locker room and go unchecked. That's unacceptable. I'm embarrassed for it, because when he said, if he said that to Martin, Jonathan Martin, he didn't only say that, he's talking to you too. Because if you're black, you know what that word means.
You know, Shannon, I'll just say this.
President Clinton calls on President Obama to fix his big Obamacare lie and back up his promise that people can keep their insurance if they like it. But President Obama has a new problem. So-called Obamacare navigators caught teaching prospective enrollees how to lie on their Obamacare applications. I'm Lou Dobbs. Good evening, everybody. Mr. Clinton today offered President Obama some unsolicited advice that the president should honor his promise that people would be allowed to keep their plans under Obamacare if they liked them. President Clinton said the president should keep that promise even if it means making changes to the law. And the same videographer who helped expose Acorn's illegal activities, conservative activist James O'Keefe, exposing Obamacare navigators advising citizens to cheat on Obamacare. Government-paid workers telling Obamacare prospective enrollees how to lie on forms and evade legal requirements in an effort to receive more subsidies. Take a look.
Lie because your premiums will be higher.
Don't tell them.
I always allow my...
Making money on a cash basis.
Business. Okay.
Don't get yourself in trouble by declaring it now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
All of this as Democratic Senator Kay Hagan of North Carolina called for an investigation into why the Obamacare website has been such a failure. The White House now admits the number of successful enrollments will be lower than expected. Fox senior White House correspondent Wendell Goler with our report.
The advice came from someone who could hardly be more influential. Former President Clinton said President Obama should make good on his promise. If you like your health insurance, you can keep it.
I personally believe, even if it takes a change in the law, the president should honor the commitment the federal government made to those people and let them keep what they got.
Mr. Clinton's call came just days after Mr. Obama said he was sorry people were finding themselves with canceled policies.
Based on assurances they got from me.
Press Secretary Jay Carney says the president has asked for options, but not options that let people keep plans that don't meet Obamacare standards.
We do not see that as fixing the problem. We see that as throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Carney suggests one option might involve subsidies for people whose current insurance policies are being canceled and who can't afford the new plans they're being offered. House Speaker John Boehner says that's not what Mr. Clinton recommended. He said they should keep their old plans if they want, even if it takes a change in the law. Former Vice President Cheney says he agrees with Mr. Clinton that the president should keep his promise, but he doesn't believe he can.
It's hard to think of how you would actually implement that. I think exactly what needs to be done is to repeal Obamacare. I think it's a serious foul up.
Meanwhile, the White House admits the number of enrollments is lower than expected, but refuses to confirm it's just a small fraction of the target. Officials say warnings that personal information might not be secure are premature, since that part of the website isn't operational yet. Jay Carney says he wasn't aware of a Democrat's call for an investigation of cost overruns for the website, but he criticized the subpoena of Todd Park, the administration's technology chief, saying hauling him up to the Hill tomorrow would interrupt his work.
We had hoped the committee would work with us to find an alternative date to give Mr. Park time to focus on his immediate task at hand, which is getting the website fixed.
Jay Carney stopped short of saying Park will be a no-show, but he complained four Obamacare officials have testified on Capitol Hill in the past 2 weeks, more than two dozen overall, and he suggested congressional oversight is becoming a distraction. Lou?
Wendell, thank you. The California Insurance Commissioner today revealed that more than 1 million health care policies are being canceled in California. The Obama administration today also updated the public on its efforts to fix healthcare.gov. A spokesman for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid said the so-called tech surge has fixed dozens of problems in hardware and software and still hopes the site will be working smoothly for the vast majority of users by the end of the month. CMS also announced it will begin reaching out to 270.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Medrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914.
Folks, getting a home from this song. My fault for the cheesy fade out, everybody. Let me bring this on. I don't know if you can hear me or not. But my fault, everybody, for the cheesy fade out. My fault. Dana. What it do, Dana? How you doing? I'm glad you are.
Hey, Timmy, how are you? Hello?
Yeah, so I saw you on for a minute, and I saw you hang up. But no, what do you think about not the fact that Bill Clinton called Barack Obama a liar? You know, not the fact that, you know, that he fronted on him, which I found that, you know, preposterous. But, you know, like I said, it's all funny games. I played that clip for you, hang up, with Bill Clinton fronting on the President Obama for this health care stuff, which is totally just, like I said, if that's anybody else, they'd call it racist, but it's Bill Clinton, you got away with it. But, hey, what do you think about the two tapes I played with my man Shannon Sharp?
You know what, the hell, there's all this hoopla about the health care stuff that's going on. We're talking about a freaking website that's not working.
Mm-hmm. But
it has nothing to do with the health care bill. What does that have to do with offering people health care? And that
again,
just goes to prove to you that people, regardless of what happens, that they're going to just go ahead and say something bad.
If a person's
website's not working, what do you do about that?
But why did Bill Clinton, come out in front of the president, though?
I don't know what Bill Clinton did. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear anything like that. So I have
you hung up on that? Oh, Lord have mercy. I played that stupid. Oh, that's what you hung up.
I have no idea what you're referring to, but what I'm saying to you is all these news stories are talking about a website that's not working.
If
you want to talk about something, why don't we talk about all this stuff that's going on in this world that's really hurting people?
I agree with you.
Something that's designed to help them.
I agree with you, but let's be real. The health care, if I want to have health care, the website ain't working, so I'm holding on. They should have tested it, but let's be real.
Okay, so you need a congressional hearing about why a website's not working?
You need a congressional hearing.
You need a congressional hearing about all this corruption that's having blind eyes turned to it.
That is true.
Why don't we have some congressionals look into why these people at my job came up in there and threatened me? I informed several times.
Listen, let's find out what Bill Clinton...
Why don't they look into... Why don't they look at how I was harassed, stalked, threatened, bullied, falsely apprehended, falsely arrested? Why don't they look into that? No. Instead, they want to look into why a website's not working.
Well...
That don't even make no sense.
That is true. And this don't make no... Dana, and this right here don't make no sense neither. Listen to this right here. This don't make no sense neither.
President Clinton calls on President Obama to fix his big Obamacare lie and back up his promise that people can keep their insurance if they like it. But President Obama has a new problem. So-called Obamacare navigators caught teaching prospective enrollees how to lie on their Obamacare applications. I'm Lou Dobbs.
Whole rant. I don't want to go the whole rant, but I just want to play the first clip that who the hell is Bill Clinton to come out to tell Barack Obama.
That was a newscaster that said that.
Oh, Dana, let me play the whole thing then. I'll play the whole thing.
President Clinton calls on President Obama to fix his big Obamacare lie and back up his promise that people can keep their insurance if they like it. But President Obama has a new problem. So-called Obamacare navigators caught teaching prospective enrollees how to lie on their Obamacare applications. I'm Lou Dobbs. Good evening, everybody. Mr. Clinton today offered President Obama some unsolicited advice that the president should honor his promise that people would be allowed to keep their plans under Obamacare if they liked them. President Clinton said the president should keep that promise even if it means making changes to the law. And the same videographer who helped expose Acorn's illegal activities, conservative activist James O'Keefe, exposing Obamacare navigators advising citizens to cheat on Obamacare. Government-paid workers telling Obamacare prospective enrollees how to lie on forms and evade legal requirements in an effort to receive more subsidies. Take a look.
Lie because your premiums will be higher.
Don't tell them.
Always allow my...
Making money on a cash basis.
Business. Okay.
Don't get yourself in trouble by declaring it now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
All of this as Democratic Senator Kay Hagan of North Carolina called for an investigation into why the Obamacare website has been such a failure. The White House now admits the number of successful enrollments will be lower than expected. Fox Senior White House correspondent Wendell Goler with our report.
The advice came from someone who could hardly be more influential. Former President Clinton said President Obama should make good on his promise, if you like your health insurance, you can keep it.
I personally believe, even if it takes a change in the law, the president should honor the commitment the federal government made to those people and let them keep what they got.
Mr. Clinton's call came just days after Mr. Obama said he was sorry people were finding themselves with canceled policies.
Based on assurances they got from me.
Press Secretary Jay Carney says the president has asked for options, but not options that let people keep plans that don't meet Obamacare standards.
We do not see that as fixing the problem. We see that as throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Carney suggests one option might involve subsidies for people whose current insurance policies are being canceled and who can't afford the new plans they're being offered. House Speaker John Boehner says that's not what Mr. Clinton recommended. He said they should keep their old plans if they want, even if it takes a change in the law. Former Vice President Cheney says he agrees with Mr. Clinton that the president should keep his promise, but he doesn't believe he can.
It's hard to think of how...
See, I'm glad you played that because that's another example of propaganda.
I'm not going to play it.
He said that he thinks, he clearly stated, and now you played the information. It was clearly stated that he said that I believe that he should keep his promise. Now, somebody's saying that somebody should keep their promise. If I say to you, you ask me, hey, Dana, I told someone I was coming to their birthday party on a Saturday, and gosh, now something else has come up, but I promised him I should be there. And I say to you, hey, Jimmy, you know, if you make the promise, you should keep it. That's not me calling you a liar. That's not me saying that you didn't do what you say you were going to do. That's just me merely stating the fact that if I make a promise, I should keep it. But again,
Dana,
it's being spun a different way.
Dana, why did the president come out and apologize, Dana?
I have no idea why he came out and apologized.
Let me tell you why.
If the website didn't work out the way it was supposed to be, things happened that didn't make things work out the way they were supposed to work out, things happened.
You know something, Dana? This is what
I'm
angry
about.
Hey, Dana, this is what I'm angry about. That people give Bill Clinton a pass. Fuck it. I don't care. If niggas don't give Bill Clinton a pass, I will too. But let me tell you
what are you talking about giving him a pass?
Listen.
What did he come out and say?
Let me tell you what he's doing right now. Dana, let me tell you what he's doing right now. What he's doing right now is humiliating the president right now. I know black folks love Bill Clinton. They ain't even going to see that. They ain't going to see Boehner and every little Republican pundit saying Bill, you know, joking on Bill Clinton's back.
You know why? Because it's an example of all the propaganda that occurs.
Dana, this is why, Dana. And I'm going to let you go ahead and make your point. Let me just tell you why.
As derogatory, and so everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon and try to make it a derogatory statement. That's not
Bill Clinton said Barack Obama was wrong. Bill Clinton is wrong. Now, let me come. Let me explain.
When did he say he was wrong?
Dana, let me tell you what the situation is first. Like the Republicans were saying before Obama got elected on the Obamacare plan, when Obama said this, that if you like your insurance, you're going to be able to keep it. When the law was written, that was not even in the law. Because that is why people are being dropped off their insurance. When Obama said, if you like your insurance, you can keep it. The employers said, we can't afford it, so we're dropping it. And so people are now getting on.
Allow me to finish.
Then your point might be valid, but
and then now that's supposed to be somebody else's fault.
No, Dana, I'm not even putting on fault. Before you start swinging blows and making defense, first see what let me explain how I'm trying to break it down to you, Dana Devine. Let me tell you, it's like this: the fact that when Obama said that. Everybody, now, if you're black, and you roll on Obama, because most black folks do like you are, and nobody would say it's all good. If you're black, then when Obama came out and said, told you this, you know, you can keep your health care plan, you will roll with it. That was not true. That never was true.
Okay.
Let me finish. So everybody been waiting. All the pundits, all Barack Obama enemies, all his enemies have been waiting on this one little term. Bush lied, people died. They've been waiting for six, 7 years to say, he told y'all that, he didn't deliver it. Now when Barack Obama comes out and say, well, listen, see, I was wrong for saying you keep your old plan if you like it. Maybe I was wrong. Now he's trying to get people to pass laws to make that true. Let me get to the Bill Clinton part. Before you bring all the Republicans in, let me get to the Bill Clinton part first. Now that the president came out and said, okay, move on with this now. Move on. Let's fix computers and still move ahead forward. His poll ratings dropped when he came out and apologized. When he came out and said, let's move forward, his poll ratings rise up. Now, when his poll ratings rise up, what does Bill Clinton come out and say? Nah, Barack, don't change it up. Go back to what you said. Go back to saying what you said. Even if you had to change, quote, even if you had to change the law, go ahead and go back with what you said. Now, Bill Clinton, no. To do all of that, to do all what he told Barack Obama to do, wrong. The law, because the president didn't get his way, is wrong. Obama said this. Maybe I did mislead you. And telling you, this is what Obama said when he made a speech. Maybe I did mislead you, American people. I told you that you couldn't keep your health care. Maybe I was wrong in that. Now, when Bill Clinton come out and say, nah, man, go on ahead and go back on that. What Bill Clinton is doing, discrediting Barack Obama, because what Barack Obama has in his 6 years of being in office has made everybody forget about the Clintons. Now, why? His wife is about to run. And what the only thing she can run on, because she can't run on a foreign policy because of Benghazi and Libya and our relationship with Russia, she can't run on a foreign policy. So what she got to run on? Health care, because health care is still an issue out there. Listen, Dana.
You were able to say what you had to say. I should be able to say what I got to say, right? I'm with you on this, but I just want to watch it. Watch the Democrats. Hold on. No, I got a question for you. Because how can you sit here and say that the president, you're saying that President Obama said a person
yes, he did.
Can keep their health care. Right. Okay, and then the employer who turned around and purchased the health care plan canceled it. So
there's no way for a worker to keep a health care plan when the employer cancels it. Oh, Dana, see.
I don't care who made a promise. It's not that easy. You can't keep it when systematic processes occur that prevent somebody from being successful.
So that's what we're talking about here.
See, all the employees
of America hate Obama, so they're gonna drop everybody because they hate Obama, right?
I never said that. What I'm saying is this: the employers did not keep the insurance because they.
Hey, Dana, you know why? Because when Bill Clinton was in office, he passed a law that all employers got to give people health care. So now that's the law now. So that was an added cost, added employers to take on. Hey, listen, Dana, to take care of health care premium to hire their employees. Now, what did Obama come out and say? Obama come out and said, got Obamacare. You ain't got insurance, you can have Obamacare. So if you are an employer, you know that health care is the number one drain on your profit. You will say, well, damn.
But what I'm saying to you is,
Dana, what you do is it, though, Dana.
Somebody, you can't say that, you didn't keep a promise because you said everybody could keep their health care. When the employers cancel the health care, whatever excuse they use to cancel that health care, because I can guarantee you that their health care is not costing that employer as much as it's costing the employee who's going to work for them every day and can't afford to be sick.
So let me get this straight. Barack Obama passed a law that can make everybody, all employees, drop people off their health insurance then, right?
No, he did not. I disagree.
If we're going to go on what you're saying, sound. You make a black woman look bad. We're going to go with you saying. If you want to take your stand. If the employers are dropping the employees off the health care service because there's Obamacare, employers' fault, not Obama.
If the employers are dropping the program, it's because they choose to drop it. It has nothing to do with whether or not they're going to vote Obamacare.
No, because they can now. Dana, because they can drop you now. That means an employer ain't got to listen. Let's make sense about it.
Hello.
Yeah, I got you in the blue room because you got all this loud shit. I'm gonna say this, but I'm gonna bring you back in. What I'm saying is this, Dana. 2 points. One, watch the Democratic Party drag health care out to the 2016 election. Watch that. Two, let me go back on the other stuff. Two, if Obamacare is out there for citizens to go get Obamacare, and if it's against the law for you not to have health care, and employees ain't got to cover you no more, this all came under the new law that went in place. The only reason why employers are dropping employees because the law says you can now, Dana, because the law says you can. And people did not know that because people did not even read the health care bill, and they would tell you that, Dana. And that's all I'm saying. Employers,
that's
Dana.
That is not what happened. The law came out and said, if an employer has an employee that works as many hours in there to provide them health care, the first thing that the people did was to find a loophole in it, and they said, okay, if we got to give you health care, now we're going to drop your hours. So that was the person's way of denying through systematic changes.
So basically, they're saving money. Tell you if it's working or if it's not working. I can say that. I can say this. I know watching now that employees are taking with the quote-unquote loophole that you said they're taking, that the quote-unquote government gave them. So I'm watching the government give
them. No, they were not given a loophole. They were not given a loophole. They found a way to sabotage the system. That's all a state of state. There was nobody given a loophole.
Is it illegal?
Here's a loophole that you can write through, and you
don't
have to provide insurance, even though it's the law.
Is it illegal? Is what they're doing illegal?
Yeah, the loophole was if somebody realized that, oh, guess what? I know what the law is, but I found a way that I don't have to abide by it.
No.
That's where the loophole comes in.
Listen. If you don't abide by the law, then you're breaking the law.
No. Not when you find a legal way to do it.
Dana, if it's legal, you're still abiding by that because there's provisions in that law for that.
Well,
if you find a provision in a law.
There's no way to create a law that's going to cover every shyster move in the world. And that's what that was, the shyster move.
Dana, I'll go here. That shyster move that added another employee, because you're not getting part. You're not full time. You're part time. Now I got another person trying to hire than somebody else. That shyster move got somebody else another job. Now two jobs being created.
Maybe you think that's a good thing. But I tell you what, I would not want to work for an employer that
well, no,
what
I'm saying,
a
no.
to take
Dana,
advantage of the system. And
if the employer ain't got
to get it. When they take advantage, it's going to deny me anything.
Dana, the government now is giving you health care. Employer ain't got to give it to you no more. That's the deal now. The government is giving you health care. And employer saying.
Everybody deserves to have health care.
Well, Dana, everybody's getting health care. Everybody, no one's saying, Dana. The argument you're saying
that
people.
When the bill passed, then the new thing to complain about was the fact that the website didn't work.
No, Dana, nobody complaining about the website anymore because people can't. Listen, Dana, right now, if I want some health care from Obamacare, I can't get on. So I can't complain about that. I should wait it out then. If I'm sick right now and I want to get on right now and I can get on, I shouldn't even be mad. If I'm sick right now and I ain't got no health care and Obamacare is working and I go there and can't get on, I should be all right. I should be happy about it. You know,
okay,
if I'm sitting
out there. If you don't have health care, you didn't have health care and the website didn't work, or you didn't have health care on Sunday and you're trying to go on the website on Monday, but you still didn't have health care before that. So now, on Monday,
Dana.
The same situation you were in before. What's the difference?
Dana.
Oh, I know what the difference was. They said the website was going to work. So now everybody has the right to be pissed.
The difference is now that I got a bill coming to me. And I haven't been seen yet. I mean, what the hell? Dana, the difference is now.
Right. What's the difference? The person that didn't have health care on Sunday, didn't have access to the website that would have gave them health care on Monday.
Because the president told me I have health.
So now the world is up in arms, and now everybody got to be pissed, and now we need a congressional to look into why a person was in the same situation they was in the day before.
Oh, Dan, you need a congressional hearing why you spent $1.3 billion on a fucking site that ain't working.
Oh, that's right.
You spent $1.3 billion on a site that ain't working.
Because they said we would have health care for all.
Dana, well, listen, we can... Dana, if you can sit. Hold on. I'm getting a crazy call on this phone. I don't know what's not. Is that your line, Dana?
No, that's not me.
All right. I'm getting a crazy call. Hold on. I don't know how that is. Right. No, the point
I'm
coming at
is saying this. All I'm saying is this. The propaganda says that we're going to find a way to be dissatisfied and disgruntled about whatever. Instead
Dana,
of giving something
all I'm gonna say is Dana. Okay, you're right, Dana. You're right. I'm gonna leave it alone with that because healthcare ain't working.
No, Dana,
I'm leaving it alone because I'm gonna say this. The healthcare should just start it off and people can't get on. And like you said, Dana, they have it before. What they're tripping on now?
No,
you're right.
I'm
go ahead. No, Dana. I even go here. I ain't going to say working, people can't get on it. And so, like you said, if they didn't have it before, they ain't got it now, why are they tripping? You're right.
No,
it's just $1.3 billion. We just spent a billion dollars. $1 billion on a website that's not working.
We're talking about an internet site that's supposed to be available to everybody across the United States.
No, hey, Dana. No, we're talking about this, Dana. Dana, what people are saying, Dana, is the inefficiency of government with waste are being wasted.
That is not evidence of inefficiency.
Okay, Dana.
That is not evidence of inefficiency.
Hey, Dana. When the government, because it's like this. The government right now is in charge of health care. That means you have to go to the government and get your health care. That's what that means now. The government system ain't set up so Americans get health care. And that's just how it is. I mean, if you don't see no problem with that, then, hey, so be it. I'll leave it at that. You know what I mean?
Right now, Dana,
people ain't got access to health care because the website is down.
Well, you're talking about a website that you're opening up to millions of people.
Wouldn't you test run it first, Dana? Wouldn't you test run it first?
Maybe they did test run it.
Well, guess what, Dana? They didn't test run it, Dana. Guess what? They didn't test run it.
No,
how
that doesn't
that?
Mean they didn't test run it. Are you kidding me?
Dana, are you kidding me?
What computer do you know that doesn't have problems at some point or sometime?
So think about that. So I agree with you. And that's why the government should not be involved in health care, because at any time, something like this can happen.
Oh, because the computer's not working?
No, because Dana, because the government system is down. I got to go to the government. Now, if the government system is down, I got to wait.
Dana, what I'm saying is, you're right.
People need to get used to it. People need to get used to it. Shit happens because you go down. It be that way. When it goes down, the government shut down,
no,
whatever.
No, Dana, it's happening right now.
If it's happening right now, it is an indication of how it might be. No need to get upset about it.
We're in a sad state where someone tries to give opportunity to others, and then people try to find a way to.
Dana, the opportunity is given. It's the law. Hey, Dana, you cannot. It's the law. There's nothing that nobody can do to stop it. The shit was. You know when it passed? The law got passed when Rahm Emanuel was the White House Chief of Secretary. Like the law got passed during Barack Obama first week in office. The law been passed. It was going to go in effect at this time.
We know that if the law was already passed, if that's the case, then that means that somebody shut down the government for no reason, right? Because if this was
already a law, there was a reason.
No, why they had to stand worry about their jobs because somebody didn't want to agree with this plan.
Right. That's true. Yes, Dana, you're right. Straight up. That's what happened. And all we did, all the government did was save money because they had to pay nobody. It was a furlough day. So in the end, the government saved money off of shutdown. In the end, Dana. In the end.
There was no saving money because the people were
they
still
did.
Paid.
They ain't got to pay nobody. Hey, Dana, they didn't pay those. Dana, because they didn't pay those people. Sorry, they didn't pay those people.
They're
going to
set up government
offices.
They're going to set up government offices eventually so people can sign up. They're going to set up government offices eventually.
Hey, Sean, you're a VA. How's the VA working for you? The government plan health care. Is that working for you all good?
Cool. Yeah, it's cool.
No waiting lines, none of that shit, right?
Lovely.
That's what I'm saying.
Lovely.
So that's what I'm saying. Dana, we got health care. It's the law. Right, and that's why employers are dropping people, because the government will give you everything you need. You don't need to be the employers ain't got to be paying the shit out for the government doing it now. So why spend money on health care? People should get angry. If the government providing it, I ain't got to pay for it no more. People should be mad about that. Only reason people are mad because their company plan is better than the government plan. The plan they have with their company.
No, dude.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you mean premium? Oh, let me get straight.
Have a bomb plan. Huh?
Let me get straight. My copay might be lower. And my company, it might be higher on Obamacare. It all depends how your shit weighs itself out. I'm having a $5 copay here. I mean, I know people right now who copay done jumped up to $40 already. I'm just saying. Already. I mean, it's a small little thing, but like I said, ain't nothing the government. It's nothing the government giving you health care where nobody else got to give it to you. You ain't got to really pay for it. I mean, that's just how it is. And the fight is down now. That's how the government is. One day the fight is down, one day the fight ain't working. It's the government.
They'll have some offices. I'm not giving a chance
because I cannot sit here and say that it's not working or it's not going to work because it's not even two months old. What I'm looking at now is that I've seen employers drop their employees. I'm seeing little things that people say was going to happen, but I can't say what the overall effect is because it's not new. I mean, it's brand new. It's not old. So I'm just looking at the fact that, yeah, you should have 40 hours a week. Now you got 30. Yeah, because if the government can do that, so you ain't going to pay no health care no more. Go to Obamacare. Yeah. But I don't believe this. I don't believe because I ain't got no health care. You're gonna find me. I'm against the law because that is the truth. If I ain't got no health care, I'm illegal. If I don't buy no health care, then I'm against the net. I'm illegal. I don't believe in that. I think that's wrong. I don't think, you know, if I got a job to get on health care, you're gonna take my money from the taxes, gonna find me out my taxes. I think that's wrong. That's the truth, Dana. I'm sorry, Dana. Straight up. I'm coming like this, Dana. What I'm saying is the truth. Look it up. This ain't no anti-Obama rant. This ain't no what have you. All I'm saying is watch the fucking Clintons. Watch the Clintons and you let them get in the way with this Obama. If y'all don't think he's this Obama, then what the fuck? Ride Hillary kick all day long. The nigga just, I'll play it again.
President Clinton calls on President Obama to fix his big Obamacare lie and back up his promise that people can keep their insurance if they like it. But President Obama has a new problem. So-called Obamacare navigators caught teaching prospective enrollees how to lie on their Obamacare application. I'm Lou Dobbs.
Hey.
Well, I'll try and get you the point. I'm saying is this. If the whole thing ain't played, I mean, they ain't because they didn't let it be. Whole thing ain't played out. When I get to a little point, but I had my chance with her. You're right. And. It is an and. It's a big ass and. Because niggas love Bill Clinton like that. Bill Clinton, only niggas to say Barack Obama is the biggest fairy tale in the whole world history about being a president. Niggas gonna pass on that. Niggas gave Bill Clinton pass every time he came out in front of Barack Obama. Every time Bill Clinton front on Barack Obama, niggas get the first black foot in the past, like, ah, we ain't saying that. Hold on, this listen all.
For to receive more subsidy, take a look.
Don't
tell him.
I always allow my...
Making money on a cash basis.
Okay.
Don't get yourself in trouble by declaring it now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
All of this as Democratic Senator Kay Hagan of North Carolina called for an investigation into why the Obamacare website has been such a failure. The White House now admits the number of successful enrollments will be lower than expected. Fox Senior White House correspondent...
That's Democratic Senator. Democratic Senator.
The advice came from someone who could hardly be more influential. Former President Clinton said President Obama should make good on his promise, if you like your health insurance, you can keep it.
I personally believe, even if it takes a change in the law, the president should honor the commitment the federal government made to those people and let them keep what they got.
Mr. Clinton's call came just days after Mr. Obama said he was sorry people were finding themselves with canceled policies.
Based on assurances they got from me.
Press Secretary Jay Carney says the president has asked.
Point I'm being is this.
Here come Bill Clinton.
This is a big mess.
So once again, it's propaganda. You play the clip of a person giving a quote that wasn't there.
Way to go, Taylor. Way to go.
You love Bill Clinton too fucking much for me. Too fucking much for me, Dana. Too much for me. It ain't propaganda. What Bill Clinton is trying to do is keep shining a spotlight on Barack Obama's stumble. It's a stumble. I'm not jumping on Barack Obama words for not even providing health care like that.
Propaganda. That's right, Dana. You tell him, Dana.
Like I said, this is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. I got New Music Thursday tomorrow. I might have some groups from Norway. And if you believe Bill Clinton is down with Barack Obama, y'all fuck with Hillary Clinton. Y'all keep sucking that white man dick. It's Jimmy Underground Radio. Good night, everybody. And may your God be with you. Don't ever, I got this show at 2 o'clock. Yeah, these niggas. Jocking fucking the Clintons. I can't believe these motherfuckers.